Welcome, MQ fans. Thank you very much for attending another presentation on this series of talks about publish, subscribe in MQ. Today, it is going to be an introduction to distributed networks. That is, you want to do publish and subscribe from two different queue managers. Up to now, the previous presentations assumed that you were doing everything from a single queue manager. And now we are going to work with two different queue managers. And from there, we'll just expand the number of queue managers. In that way, you can see some of the challenges and some of the approaches that can be used. Let's go to page number 2. And this is just a list of the related presentations that were given related to this PubSub theme. And let's go to page number 3. And what is the agenda? The agenda is that there are 4 main topics. The one is, what is the motivation behind having this distributed PubSub? And there are 3 basic topologies for a PubSub network. One is called the direct routed cluster. Another is topic host routed cluster. And another is hierarchy. And each approach will be covered in detail in another presentation, not in this one. Here, today, we'll be just talking briefly about each one of those alternatives. And there is a 4th alternative, which will be covered first, but it's not really that feasible, but helps with the understanding of the challenges that are encountered and why the other 3 alternatives are better. Let's go to page number 4. Okay, what is the motivation? This section is based on the following presentation, which provides more details on distributed MQ for queues, remote queue definitions, transmission queues, the sender channel, receiver channel, the MCA, etc. It contains both an audio in MP3 file and also a PDF. And this is a lively presentation. It is. I have given more than 20 presentations under the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange umbrella, and this by far was the most fun that I had, because I had to use the theme of Romeo and Juliet and how they were talking to each other and so on, and I was doing the parallel in increasing the complexity using MQ. Queue managers and so on, in order for Romeo to send messages to Juliet and Julia read the messages. Anyway, it was a fun one. And hopefully, if you are not familiar with these concepts, you could give it a try, and hopefully it will be entertaining at least and useful to you. Let's go to page number 5. Okay, let's start with the basic stuff. We have a single host, we have a single queue manager, we have a single queue. And on the left side, we're using a put application, and let's say that is the sample AMQS put. And it's going to use the bindings mode because it's local to the queue manager. Bindings mean that it's using inter-process communications shared memory. It's not using the network. Again, shared memory is being used to talk between the MQ client application and the queue manager. Then this application puts a message to the queue, and then on the right side, we see the corresponding application that will get the messages, will read them. And it's in this case a sample MQS get, again using bindings mode of connection, and will consume the message. Okay, this is just very basic. This is nice to be starting with the study of MQ, but rarely you will see these type of easy situations. Okay, then let's increase the complexity a little bit. Let's go to page number 6. And now that we have introduced the topic of topics, and let's replace, can we use this topology for PubSub? And yes. And this is the topology that we have used in previous presentations. And let's review. Again, we have a single host, a single queue manager, a single topic. On the left side, we have a publisher that is using the MQ sample called MQSPUB for pub. and it's connecting through the bindings mode, again, shared memory, local, not network, and it's publishing a message to the topic. And on the right side, we see a subscriber using the MQ sample called AMQS sub and connected through bindings mode to consume those messages. We can have multiple of these subscribers, but I just wanted to have, just to show one in the diagram. So far, so good. Let's go to page number 7. Okay, everything so far has been in the same host. Well, what will happen if we decided that to have another application that will put the message, another application that will get a message, but in a different host, okay? And we are not talking yet about a second queue manager. This is just, these are just the client applications. Then on the left side, we have host number 2, and is might be connected in the same room as the other host, or maybe connected in a different room and a different building, maybe in the other state and another country, and so on. The longer the distance, the less feasible is this approach, because there is a network latency, and it still is possible to do that. But it's not recommended if you have large number of remote clients and the distance is very, it is large. Anyway, let's go back to this particular view. Then in host 2, we have now some applications. We cannot use the application, the sampled applications that are called the bindings mode. Those applications, the bindings applications, do not know about the network. They are talking about shared memory. But in this case, the application is in one host, cannot use the shared memory to talk to another host that is in another queue manager that is located in another host. It has to use the network. That's the only choice. Then we need to use the samples that are compiled with client libraries for MQ. And just by convention, the samples that are given with MQ, the ones that end with C for client, then those are the ones that were compiled with the network libraries, and they know how to talk through the network to talk to the queue manager. Then in this case, it's MQS put C for client, and the get is MQS get C for client. They will be using something called a server connection channel to talk to the queue manager. The queue manager will have something called a listener that I include here in order to reduce some of the complexity of showing the diagram. So otherwise it gets too busy. But again, we need to have a listener, and the listener needs to be up and running. The default port for that listener is 1414. How do we specify to these client applications in the remote host how to connect to the queue manager? Well, there are different ways. One is we can hard code it, but that's not really that advisable. We can use instead MQ server environment variable, or we can use a client channel definition table, or CCDT. But those that topic is beyond the scope of this presentation. This is just how to do it. I mean, that it can be done with these articles, with these artifacts, but we are not. I'm not explaining how right now. Anyway, these applications in host 2 connect through the server connection channel remotely to host 1, the queue manager, and they put or get a message. And just for illustration, we can have still the bindings mode applications and locally in host 1. Let's go to page number 8. Okay, this is the corresponding thing for topics. And same idea. We have in host 2, in the remote host, we have a publishing application, this MQ sample, in this case is MQS pub C for client, MQS sub C for client again. Same idea, they connect through a server connection channel, they publish to the topic, or they receive to the message that is published. Okay, let's go to page number 9. Again, this is okay for local or relatively local close proximity activity and for occasional use from remote clients, but if you want to have constant remote access, and But for constant remote access from many clients, from far places, this is not efficient, mostly because of network latency and so on. It's more efficient to introduce a queue manager that is closer to the application. Then this is one of the best practices with distributed MQ, that the application should be connected closely to a queue manager. Then if the final destination is a remote queue manager, instead of doing remote connections if they are far away, it's better to have an intermediary queue manager, and those clients will be connected closely to that intermediate queue manager. Then the queue manager can talk to the other queue manager, which is far more efficient for bulk. Imagine that it's kind of a interstate highway that has high capacity, and it can send many messages and has more maintenance and so on. I mean, it's just, instead of a tiny little secondary road, we want to use a faster road in order to connect the queue managers. But I'm a little bit ahead of my talk, and let's go to page number 10. Okay, well, that's what I wanted to indicate, that again, one of the best practices is to put a queue manager closer to the applications where they are located. Then we have a queue manager 1 in host 1 on the left side, talking to queue manager 2 in host 2 on the right side, that is closer to the MQ client application. And the idea is this: the put application will connect maybe through bindings mode, because that's faster, to queue, but it's not really the queue that is the final destination. This is just an intermediary queue. And somehow, automatically, the message will be transferred from one queue manager on the left to the other queue manager that is on the right. And then the message arrives to the final destination, that is a queue, and then there is a GET application that will read the message. Now, how this automatically thing happens? And let's go to page number 11. And this is the idea. We need to introduce several things. One of them is something called a remote queue definition, which it is not really a queue, but it serves as the intermediary between the application that is putting the message. Then the application is going to put the message into this artifact called a remote queue definition. This remote queue definition is associated with something called a transmission queue. And then the transmission queue is the one that is physically there and is going to receive the message, and is going to add few pieces of information to the message, such as which is the final destination queue and to which queue manager. And then there is something called the MQ Channel Agent, MCA, that is going to read messages from the transmission queue and will send them across through something called a sender channel. And then the other queue manager will have, the other queue manager will have a corresponder MQ channel agent that is be using another type of channel called the receiver channel that has exactly the same name. The names of the sender channel and receiver channel must be the same. If they are not the same, it's not going to work. And this is a very, very common pitfall for novices of MQ. They try to reverse the order. For MQ, it doesn't matter what it has inside the tokens that are inside the name. And what is important for the queue managers is that the name, the complete name, should be the same for the sender and the receiver channel. Now, we humans, we add this type of nomenclature in order to help us to find out this channel from where to where. Then, for example, in this case, it's queue manager 1 to queue manager 2. But we can just call it Fred, the name of the channel. But later on, I mean, that Fred channel may not say anything to us. And that's the reason it's better to have meaningful names. However, when we are novices to MQ, we try to think that somehow we assume wrongly that MQ is parsing the tokens of the names, and it's not. And the important thing again is the name of the channels, sender and receiver, must be the same. Anyway, then through that pair of channels, sender and receiver, the messages arrive, then the MQ channel agent determines that, oh, I got a message. And to which queue in this queue manager is located, or maybe it's to a different queue manager. Maybe I'm just an intermediary and I need to do this, passing the message to another queue manager in another host. In this case, it's a local queue, and then the MCA is going to put the message into the local queue, and then the GET application is going to get the message. Now, as you can see, the process goes in one direction. Then we can do in one host, the message goes into another host and is received there. That's where it can be gotten, okay? Sometimes some people think that they could use this structure in order to get messages. Then imagine that on the left side, instead of put, we do a GET. Then they try to do a GET on the remote queue definition. Well, it will not work because there are no messages there. It's not going to get messages from the other side. It is a single way that goes, in this case, from left to right. Therefore, it's not possible to do a GET using this scheme in host one for the remote queue. It's a very common mistake for the for novices. Now, the same thing applies for clusters. I know that I'm going a little bit ahead, but I need to mention this. In clusters, we'll have local queues that are part of the cluster, and those local queues are the only ones where the messages can be read, can be obtained. Then if we have 10 queue managers and only one local queue is defined that belongs to the cluster, let's say in queue manager number one, then only from queue manager one, the messages from that queue can be read. The beauty of the cluster is that all the 10 managers that belong to the cluster can put messages to the queue. Then 10 queue managers can do puts, only one queue manager can do a GET. This will be covered later on in more detail, but at least I wanted to let you know that GETs are done on the local queues. Let's go to page number 12. The following tech note can be very useful. It is one that I use quite a lot when I'm establishing the connections between the queue managers, because they are different objects that I need to do and so on. Then what I do is I copy the commands from this tech note, and then I do a global search and replace with the names that I want to use for the queue managers and queues and so on. Then I open two command prompts at the same time into windows. In the first window, I use run MQSC and I copy and paste the property statements that will create the remote queue definitions, the transmission queue, the sender channel, and so on. And then I go to the second window that I do run MQSC on the receiving queue manager, and I create there the receiver channel, the local queue that I need, etc. And then I do a test, and there is a suggestion there on how you can do the test. And it's important that the test in both directions work well. And the problem is this. I've seen many PMRs in which customers do these steps, but they don't stop to test the configuration. But then they create clusters, they create FTP, the file transfer with managed file transfer and so on, because in order to have a managed file transfer, you need to have this type of configuration. Then this configuration is very useful. But these customers try to do too many things at once, and then if they are having problems, they will not know in which step they had the problem, and usually they blame it on the last thing they did. And then they will report that they have a problem with the file transfer edition. But there is no problem there. Mostly it's because maybe they made a mistake and they use the wrong channel name and things like that when they define it. Then it's important you do the test. Let's go to page 13. Two slides ago when I was showing the diagrams, I actually used some numbers for the different steps. and the numbers are reflected in pages 13 and 14. And when I was showing you the diagram, I show you the entire flow, but it's easy for some people who want to read the actual details. Here they are in page 13, and let's go to page 14. Okay, and there is more information here for you to read at your leisure. And let's go to page 15. Can we do this for PubSub? And the answer is yes. We can use the mechanism, but we have to add a few more things. By the way, you will not see this information in any publication. I have not seen it. It just occurred to me as part of developing this presentation, and I thought, yeah, that method can be extended. It is not practical, and that's the reason it's not documented. But there are no technical impediments to do that. It's just, it has some administrative problems. Again, you have to do a lot of administration. It is not flexible. It is not extendable, okay? But it can be done. Then in case you don't want to use clusters or hierarchies, which are the suggested methods to do PubSub in a distributed network of queue managers, maybe you could do this. But again, it's labor intensive, it works, but it's up to you. But it's just another alternative, and I thought and to explain it. This one has more steps. When I see this type of thing, I remember these elaborate toys in which you like a mousetrap, in which you drop a ball into this, and then it moves this other level and goes and triggers something else, and eventually there is something that happens. And this is explained in page 16, and it is basically the following. Let's start with the left side. Instead of a put application, we have a publisher. And when we publish something, we publish to a topic. That's step A. We publish to a topic, okay? Then from the topic is going to say, oh, do I have subscribers? Oh yeah, I have a subscriber. And it's going to copy that message that was received by the publisher into the subscriber, and that's step number B over there. Is a subscriber that has a provided queue. It happens that this provided queue is the remote queue definition to the remote queue manager. There is the step number one label there, and this is exactly as the other step number one in the previous slide. This is the remote queue definition, and it is just a conceptual artifact. It's not a real queue, and the message passes through to the transmission queue. The transmission queue then interacts with the MCA that reads that message. The MCA sends the message, that's step number three, across the network, arrives to the host number two, in the queue manager two, and then step number four is the same as before. The MCA is going to put it into the destination queue. But wait a moment, there is no queue there, but it doesn't matter. It has been defined as a queue alias, which is a topic alias. Then the MCA is thinking that it's putting the message into a queue, but we are tweaking the MCA. It's really a topic alias. And the topic alias, it is publishing to a topic, and there is a subscriber that is listening to the topic, and voila, then the subscriber will receive the message. This thing works. As you can see, there are many steps. Let's go to page 16. The steps necessary to create the topic alias and the other administrative objects are described in the tech note that is mentioned in the link above. Let's go to page 17. Okay, what are the disadvantages? Again, this method is doable. It is brute force, and it's not really recommended because it requires a lot of administration. It is not flexible. It is not extendable. And new topics require their own remote queue definition in the sending queue manager, and then require their own topic alias in the receiving queue manager. We have reached a point in which, okay, if this thing that was needed for distributed queuing is not recommended, then what is recommended? And let's go to page 18. Now, I'm going to reverse the order of the alternatives or the methods that are described in the documentation. In the documentation, the Polish subscribe hierarchies is explained last, but I'm explaining it first. Why? Because it is a natural extension of the previous slide, okay? And is the following idea. We have queue managers that are connected through server and receiver channels. Therefore, they have their own transmission queues, they have their own remote queue definitions, and so on. And the important thing is that one of the queue managers is going to identify the other queue manager as being the parent. Let's go to page 19. We'll have a parent-child relationship. Each child will have only one parent, but a parent can have multiple children. For the two queue managers that we have already connected, we can form a hierarchy. We use running QSC on the second queue manager, and then enter alter queue manager parent and the name of the first queue manager. The diagram below shows that queue manager 1 is the parent of queue manager 2. Let's go to page 20. The following picture was taken from the online manual in the section for distributed publish-subscribe networks. Publishers and subscribers to a topic can connect to any queue manager in the hierarchy, and the messages flow between the queue managers. And the picture shows 5 queue managers in a hierarchy where queue manager 1 is the parent of queue manager 2 and queue manager 3. Queue manager 3 is the parent of queue manager 4 and queue manager 5. There is one publisher and it is connected with queue manager 2. And there are 3 subscribers, one connected at queue manager 2, another at queue manager 3, and another at queue manager 4. When the publisher publishes a message at queue manager 2, the subscriber that is located also at queue manager 2, both publisher and subscriber are shown on the left side of the queue manager 2 in the diagram, then the message is delivered to the subscriber right away. There is no need to traverse to other queue managers because both the publisher and the subscriber are connected to the same queue manager. Let's go to page 21. Publications delivered to subscribers on queue manager 3 and queue manager 4 need to be routed from queue manager 2 to the parent of queue manager 2, which is queue manager 1. Queue manager 1 knows that there is a child, queue manager 3, and sends the message there. And there is a subscriber, and that subscriber at queue manager 3 will consume the message. But the hierarchy knows also that there is a subscriber at queue manager 4, and the message is copied from queue manager 3 to queue manager 4, and the subscriber at queue manager 4 will consume the message. As you can see, there were 3 hops from the publisher at queue manager 2. Hop number 1 was to queue manager 1, hop number 2 was a queue manager 3, hop number 3 was a queue manager 4 to reach a subscriber. Let's imagine that queue manager 3 is down for maintenance. Then if the publisher publishes another message, the subscribers at queue manager 3 and queue manager 4 will not receive a copy of the publication because queue manager 3 is not available. And therefore, everything at queue manager 3 and down the stream, in this means queue manager 4 and queue manager 5, will not receive messages. This is one of the disadvantages of the hierarchy. There is a single path from one queue manager to another, and if there is a disruption in that path, then everything up to that disruption will receive messages, but after that disruption will not receive it, and there is no redundancy. Let's go to page 22. When is a good idea to use hierarchies? Well, hierarchies give you direct control over the relationships between every queue manager in the hierarchy. This allows fine-grained control over the routing of messages from publishers to subscribers. It is especially useful when routing between queue managers in which the networks have restricted connectivity. But If an intermediary queue manager stops, then there is no flow to subsequent queue managers in the hierarchy. In the example mentioned before, if queue manager 3 is down, then queue manager 4 will not receive messages. Let's go to page 23. It is possible to use clusters for publish subscribe. Such cluster is a standard cluster with one or more topic objects added to the cluster. It means cluster topics. And the diagram below shows the 5 queue managers that we used before, but instead of being connected in a hierarchy, they are connected in a cluster. And we have, again, one publisher and we have 3 subscribers. Using the cluster connectivity, when the publisher publishes a message, the message will be broadcasted to the subscribers. Let's go to page 24. There are 2 ways to configure how publish-subscribe messages are routed in a cluster: direct routing and topic host routing. And let's go to page 25. Direct routing. When you configure a direct routed clustered topic, messages published on one queue manager are sent directly from that queue manager to every subscription on any other queue manager in the cluster. This can provide the most direct path for publications, but does result in all queue managers in the cluster becoming aware of all other queue managers, each potentially having cluster channels established between them. Let's go to page 26. In order to show you better the drawback of using direct routing, let's see the following cluster. There are 2 hosts. There are 2 full repositories. They are shown in green, 1 for each host. And we have 3 partials in each host, for a total of 6 partial repositories. The diagram that is shown here indicates the cluster sender and cluster receiver channels that are used to connect all the partials with both full repositories and between the full repositories. Let's go to page 27. Let's simplify the view and let's hide that complexity of the cluster sender and cluster receiver channels. And let's go to page 28. This diagram shows what happens when a cluster topic, let's say sales, is added at the partial repository number 4. At the moment that the sales cluster topic is added, automatically the cluster channels are created between all the queue managers, and this is shown in the red arrows. For example, we added the sales cluster topic at partial repository 4. However, because there could be subscribers at all the other partial repositories, therefore it is necessary to have a connection between the partial 4, that's where the topic sales is located, to the other repositories. However, it is possible to have publishers at the other partial repositories and also subscribers in the other repositories. Therefore, every single one of these partial repositories needs to be connected to every other partial repository. Wow, it is an explosion of connections. Let's go to page 29. Direct routing clusters rely on NQ maintaining a high level of sharing of information and connectivity between every queue manager in the cluster. For small and simple networks, that is, a small number of queue managers and a fairly static set of publishers and subscribers, this could be acceptable. However, when used in larger or more dynamic environments, the overhead might be prohibited. For example, let's imagine that we have 10 clustered topics that are different. Could be sales, stock, fruit, etc. And then we have, in each partial repository, we have subscribers for the different topics. And we need to have all that information being sent between the partial repositories about the publishers and subscribers and the topics and so on. And all that information needs to be exchanged between all the queue managers. Then imagine that you have a cluster that has, let's say, 100 queue managers. Each one of those queue managers needs to be connected with each other queue manager. And as you can see, there will be a lot of overhead. Let's go to page 30. One way to reduce the complexity of the connections is by a feature introduced in MQ version 8 as alternative for the potentially large performance impact of direct routing. Messages published on one queue manager are sent to another queue manager that hosts a definition of the administered topic object. This is called the topic host queue manager. This queue manager routes the message to every subscription on any other queue manager in the cluster. This is enabled during the defined topic in which the attribute clroute has a value of topic host. The default is direct. Let's go to page 31. If the publishers or subscribers are not located on the topic host queue manager, this results in a longer route for publications. And the benefit is that only the topic host queue managers become aware of all the other queue managers in the cluster and potentially have cluster channels established with them. Let's go to page 32. And this diagram hopefully will show you the comparison. On the left side, we have a view of direct routing. Each one of the blue squares in the periphery of the graph represents a partial repository. And each one of those squares is connected to each other. As you can see, it's pretty busy. And imagine now all the messages that are sent between them to maintain the list of active subscribers, which are the clustered topics, etc. On the right hand, we have the diagram for a topic host routing in which there are two queue managers that are shown in the center. These are not the full repositories. These are just two other partial repositories, but which were designated to be the topic host queue managers. Each one of these two topic host queue managers will be connected to every other queue manager in the cluster. But if we can see the connections in the periphery, we see that each one of those blue boxes representing the partials, which do not have clustered topics, are connected only to the topic host queue managers in the center. And they are not connected to the other blue squares that are in the periphery of the diagram. Big contrast. By using topic host routing, it saves a lot of connections. Let's go to page 33. And this is the end of the presentation. Thank you very much. Until the next presentation.